What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome into the Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come. FanDuel, DraftKings, we're talking all things NFL DFS this week. Week four upcoming. We got the week three recap, though, because week three was the first week where we really saw things shake up, right? We really saw what we felt like we could project be dashed and what we couldn't project happen. So a very, very stern and strong reminder of variance, that the NFL is event-based, that we have to try to be anti-fragile if we want to have success. All of these DFS concepts came and just kind of smacked you right over the side of the head, reminding you that all the things that you think are going to happen don't always happen. So we're going to jump into the recap here. Listen, a couple things. For those of you who do or don't know, you can sign up, guys. I'm getting there's a Lineup Logic email list. I will put out just one email a week just with some of the content links and the player pool from the podcast and that kind of thing, just kind of as a point of reference. You can get that from the website, lineuplogicdfs.com. If you're not already on it, check it out. It's a nice little email list. Get in there, get on the list so you get some of the content that you may have missed throughout the week. Also, just want to say a shout out and a thank you to, all the guys writing content over there, Mike Alexander, Joe Berg, Spectre, obviously, Ryan and Josh working on the cheat sheet. You guys know all of these guys giving their personal time for Lineup Logic, and I really, really appreciate them. One specific shout out, Donald Remington. Golf season just came to an end. Anything and all things golf on the website in the last couple weeks were credit to Donald Remington. Alex did an awesome job. So big shout out to him. Thank you to him as well. But hey, we got a lot to talk about. A lot of interesting things happening in week three. So let's go ahead and take a look back at what we saw from these games. Starting with the Los Angeles, San Francisco, just a wildly entertaining Thursday night football game. I fade Thursday night football because it just usually is terrible. And we saw Houston, Cincinnati just be like the worst game ever. And then boom, LA, San Francisco blew that out of the water. That should have been our one little whiff in the air that things are not what they seem for week three. If that was an indication, stellar performances from both backs, Hyde and Gurley, definitely deserve our attention. Neither one was particularly efficient, only 4 yards per carry, just under 4 yards per carry. But there's a key piece of fantasy data for each. I mean, both had explosive rushes. Gurley had 7 targets. Hyde had 4. 35 total opportunities for Todd Gurley. Massive opportunity share in that LA offense. 29 for Hyde, which is nothing to sneeze at. I believe those are two of the clubhouse leaders for just total touches at the running back position this weekend in the week three slate. Volume that you cannot ignore. So Robert Woods, Sammy Watkins, both seven targets, 100 yards. I think it's interesting to me because Sammy Watkins is more of the explosive player, you know, the profile that we know, but Robert Woods seeing a similar amount of volume in this situation kind of indicates maybe that's a guy that we target sometimes to be contrarian when we want to go after the LA offense. Could be productive in certain spots. Cooper Kupp, only 2 targets in this game. Massive volume for Pierre Garçon. We continue to see. We know it's going to be Pierre Garçon in that scheme. It's going to be Pierre Garçon every week. He's going to be their primary pass catcher. It's Garçon and Hyde. A very concentrated fantasy offense is really nice because it's projectable. It's easy to see. There are certain teams where we kind of know there are only 2 fantasy assets. There are only 3 fantasy assets, and we have to. I think that's useful. The Los Angeles offensive line is just better. That's the one of the keys here. I mean, they're just better. They upgraded. We know they made moves in free agency. They didn't take one sack in the whole game. I mean, that's gigantic for Jared Goff. He had a 145 passer rating, was 22 for 28. I mean, you really, really have to start to pay attention to spots where Jared Goff could seemingly be comfortable in the pocket, have all of his weapons at his disposal, and take advantage, because we've seen this year two solid performances and one that was very Goff-like. So it's going to be kind of a, you know, we're going to be back and forth on Jared Goff's status in our rosters. Jacksonville, Baltimore. Wow. I guess I don't know what to say. Like, sorry for shoving this down your throat, United Kingdom. A Baltimore blowout. First of all, on paper, this game sounds terrible. It turned out to be terrible, even though Jacksonville put up some splashy offense here. Joe Flacco, hashtag not elite. 2 for 18, pulled from the game in the fourth quarter to give Ryan Mallett some snaps. The Jacksonville secondary is elite, however. Jalen Ramsey, not to be messed with, an 89 Pro Football Focus grade. He is a top 10, if not top 5 corner in 2017. Orrin Sharp on Twitter, he called the Jacksonville tight end. He nailed it. He said, this is the major hole in the Baltimore defense. They don't account for it. It's going to be shored up in the coming weeks, but doesn't matter. Mercedes Lewis with 4 touchdowns. Wow. You know, I think what's most impressive is that Blake Bortles actually had the discipline to find him in each one of those situations and like hit him and not screw it up. Like, that is huge for Blake Bortles to not like force the ball to Marquise Lee for no reason when Mercedes Lewis is wide open again and again and again. As for the backfields, kind of a mess, you know, carries for everyone in Baltimore. Very hard to determine who's going to get the work. Alex Collins ended up with 9 carries, kind of garbage timing it. Terrence West with 6, Buck Allen with 8 and 5 receptions. So it seems like he's going to continue to be the most valuable, Buck Allen. But if this team without Marshall Yanda can't really progress down the field and Flacco isn't really playing that well, you got to be a little bit nervous. The Jacksonville running game, a little bit more clear. Leonard Fournette had 17 carries and 3 targets. I think he got a reduction in workload in the second half. You know, very logical. They had a massive lead. I was impressed with Bortles, like, taking this opportunity and not screwing it up, throwing 4 touchdowns, a willingness to take with the defense, giving him a 77% QBR. That's good. I mean, reduced volume for Blake Bortles, more clear game plan. This is good for him. And I think it will increase the efficiency and effectiveness of the offense. And in situations where we want to roster Leonard Fournette, maybe we won't be scared off by Bortles, like crazy Bortlesy-ness. New Orleans, Carolina. I am just kicking myself over this one, guys. And I am sorry that I did not give you Drew Brees takes. I mean, listen, third all-time in passing yards, completions, and touchdowns. The notion that he would continue to take losses this season in 2016 and not bounce back, that he and Peyton wouldn't figure out how to bounce back in a positive way, is just asinine. It's unbelievable that I didn't think this through, especially against a divisional opponent. There's data that suggests that teams have more success inside the division the first time that they face him. Now, the second time that they face him, not so much. Games are low scoring. But against Rivera, we know that Peyton and Rivera know each other like a book. And they face each other, what, 2 times a year, every year for the last, you know, 5 or 6, and since when, I forget when Riverboat Ron started as the head coach. But the New Orleans offensive line is the other reason that I'm pissed off, because they're top 3 in pass protection in 2016. They were sitting at 1 in pass protection in DVOA in just last week. And we're looking at the Carolina defense and very, very nervous, but we're forgetting that we have a Hall of Fame quarterback and one of the best offensive lines in pass protection in football that has their back up against the wall against a divisional opponent that they know well, and they have a shit ton of wide receiver talent. Brandon Coleman took an end zone option. He's an end zone option, but Michael Thomas reminding us that he is the top talent on this team, and he is an elite fantasy option. Brees had a 151 passer rating when targeting Michael Thomas, according to Pro Football Focus. I mean, Mark Ingram's volume was reassuring. I have a lot of Mark Ingram shares because I like tying myself to elite quarterbacks with my season-long guys. 19 opportunities, almost 5 yards per touch. Still hasn't found the end zone. That is going to change, guys. That's going to change. There's just no way, you know, we can't walk away from thinking Mark Ingram's not going to score a touchdown in 2017. Does that make sense? No. He's going to have some end zones. Positive game script, they are going to feed these running backs. So I do think that there's going to be some moments where we can get to Mark Ingram and possibly exploit the fact that people go, well, this is a running back by committee. I just don't want anything to do with it. Well, it is, but there are 20 effective touches going for Mark Ingram, who's been very, very efficient with them throughout in both his pass-catching opportunities and his running opportunities, and he still owns the highest market share of rushing yards in that offense. Alvin Kamara, very clear third down role, okay? But this rushing touchdown, you may look at the box score and go, oh, man, he's going to take the job. Well, let's be very clear. The rushing touchdown came on a fourth quarter kind of broken play on the edge. He gets to the edge and he just, man is athletic. He is, he's big. I don't think people understand. You think of Alvin Kamara as like, well, he's a pass catching back. Like he's a third down back. You're thinking like Chris Thompson. No, Alvin Kamara is like 215 pounds, 6'2". He's a big dude. We're talking about an SEC running back with huge size and great hands. He is an asset to this offense, and he's really good. That broken play, well, it's not really a broken play as much as it was a great play by him. I don't want to take credit away by saying it was all Carolina tackling fault, but it was a great play by him, 37-yard backbreaker late in that game. So he's a very interesting option no matter what we do. Carolina, they're only going to succeed if Cam can succeed. Okay, 167 passing yards, 3 interceptions, 17 for 26 with 4 sacks, and a QBR of 7. Not making that up. 7. He was terrible. According to Pro Football Focus, he threw each of those interceptions from a clean pocket. No pressure. He was not hurried on any of those. That's a damning statistic against a pass defense that allowed nearly 500 passing yards through 2 weeks with no player in that secondary grading above average via Pro Football Focus. Lone bright spot, McCaffrey entered with 12 targets and a 75% catch rate. He saw 11 targets, 9 receptions, and 101 total yards. Cam is going to key on him going forward, and his sure hands are a security blanket for Cam Newton. No doubt about it. That relationship, I think, is budding and very clear. Now, will teams start to scheme away and spy on McCaffrey? Yes, they will. And if they think, if they realize, if we can take this away and Cam can't throw the ball downfield, you're going to reduce his effectiveness. But he was the best offensive asset that they had. Kelvin Benjamin left with a small knee injury. I'm just glad I didn't roster him. I was nervous about him. I'm just glad I didn't have Kelvin Benjamin shares. Funches, 10 targets, the volume we hoped for, but Cam's inaccuracies really killed him. Only 4 receptions. And listen, he's talented, but his ceiling is tied to his passer. And if he can't get any good, good looks from Cam, it's going to be a struggle. 20 passer rating when targeting Funchess. That's not a functional QB to wide receiver relationship. And I think it's probably a stay away until further notice. The game, though, was a prime spot to target a DFS heuristic, one that we have to talk about, and we'll talk about it at the end of the show, and I will make sure that we talk about it in the lessons learned part of the podcast. So think about that game, and we'll come back to it. Giants going to Philadelphia. How about that Jake Elliott 61-yard field goal for the rookie? Man, you talk about, you're going to get free pretzels and beer in Philly for life, kid. Good for you. You beat the Giants, and as a rookie, no one forgets. unless you, like, blow it in the playoffs or something, like Donovan McNabb, you know, like they hate Donovan McNabb. Like, don't Hopefully he won't get downgraded to Donovan McNabb status. Wentz, solid, fine. 21 for 31, 176 yards. They limited his deep balls compared to what he did against Kansas City. You know, 92 passer rating, eh. Ertz and Jeffrey getting the targets, a very concentrated pass volume. I don't think Nelson Aguilar is a thing. I never really thought it would be a thing. I'm going to be honest with you. One deep broken play in week one, I'm not really going to like buy into Nelson Aguilar. I will buy into Ertz. I will buy into Jeffrey. Not a lot of depth on their routes, though. 111 yards between the two of them. That's not very, very, very promising. That's the word. However, the Giants rush defense, not very promising either, allowing 4.9 yards per attempt on 39 carries, 193 total yards on the ground for the Eagles, a team that was not rushing the ball effectively until week three. Smallwood and Blount each powered for four first downs, nearly 6 yards per touch. Smallwood leading the team in snap rate, two targets in the pass game. It's going to be very hard to project this backfield clearly. Three-way committee is my guess. Darren Sproles, ACL, broken arm, rest in peace. I love Darren Sproles. He's the man. He's absolutely the man. Three-way committee, I think it's going to be Smallwood and Blount and then a little bit of Corey Clement. The one thing you hate is that Blount is clearly the goal line back. He's been the goal line back in all three games. He's gotten goal line touches in all three games. So that is frustrating, but he's good at it. So Vulture City. Listen, the biggest takeaway from this game, and we'll talk about the Giants offense, but the big takeaway is the jury's very much out on this Giants elite defense. They're allowing 130 rushing yards per game through week three, ranking fourth worst in the NFL. What's more damning is the unit, which was projected as top three overall going into 2017, yielded those yards to the Lions and the Eagles. When Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys do it at home, you say, okay, I get it. But when the Lions and the Eagles do it, two teams that, to this point, in week two, they basically couldn't run the ball in Kansas City. Detroit this week against Atlanta barely ran the ball at all. You have let two teams that are pass-centered teams based on game script, what we've seen from them in other weeks, run the ball down your throat. It's very, very, very troubling if you are a Giants fan. That's the really, really, really difficult thing. I mean, those teams have only averaged 72 and 91 yards per game on the season. The Giants alone allowed the Eagles to go for 193 yards. That's crazy. Okay, New York pass catchers. Let's talk about this New York Giants offense because, listen, as tilting as it might be to be a Giants fan, there's fantasy value here. They're going to get predictable volume. McAdoo ran the ball in only 17 plays for a total of 49 yards. Nope, not running the ball in New York. They're going to throw the ball. 47 attempts for Eli, who boasted a 74% completion rate, did not take one sack. They got the ball out of his hands fast. They let those guys work in space. It worked. Odell Beckham, I don't know what to say. He's filthy. He is filthy. Most dynamic wide receiver in the NFL, in the end zone. I don't think you can take that away from him. Okay, touchdown magnet. 0.82 touchdowns per game, according to Scott Barrett of PFF, making two wildly impressive end zone catches, playing 83% of snaps, 13 total targets. That second catch in the end zone, the funny thing is the first catch in the end zone, the toe tapper on the right, was insane. And then the second catch was even better, so everybody forgets the first one, which you were like, oh shit, Odell, that was amazing. Like, how he got his feet down and clean, it just didn't look like it was possible. And then you watch the replay and you're like, yep, sure enough, both of them are in. No room for doubt there. Unbelievable. Marshall and Shepard also saw solid volume, 21 total targets, 15 catches, 199 total yards, and one TD to Shepard. Shepard was really making the most out of his targets, no doubt about it. He had over 120 passer rating when targeted by Eli. So very good stuff from Sterling Shepard. It's interesting. I think the real takeaway here is also about the Philadelphia pass defense. Not good. Like, they are exploitable again. You know, we saw Ben McAdoo's scheme to, and listen, it put him back in the game. it put them back in the game. They just kept throwing the ball. And Philadelphia could not do anything about it. Evan Ingram not going away. 7 targets, 5 receptions. Very much lines up with what we saw for volume in week two against the Lions. In good matchups, Evan Ingram is going to be a thing. Pats versus Texans. I took a stand on Watson in my Kane Takes on Vegas article, and wow, was I wrong. He proved me wrong. He looked pretty good, and he looked good. He looked good as a playmaker. I think that that's the key part here, is I think that the Texans have a playmaker. You saw him when plays broke down. We held on to the ball a little bit too long. Pocket collapsed. Things didn't look like they were going well. He scrambled. He made something out of nothing. He extended plays. He's a playmaker. The kid is a winner. He knows. His arm looked sharp, too. Like, he had some zip, too, so he's improving. You know, he took advantage of this Pats defense. It's allowing the highest volume of passing yards in the NFL. 365 passing yards per game. 2.5 touchdowns per game, that's insanity. It's hard to believe, but I don't think it's going away, especially considering how efficient Brady's been on the opposite side. You're going to have shootouts. You know, this is going to be like a Breeze and the Saints situation. You're going to have shootouts with Brady and the Pats. So it's very hard to project the Houston skill players, except for DeAndre Hopkins. Once again, got 8 targets, 76 yards. He was fine. You know, I think in better matchups, we're going to see more. Although I don't know how many more better matchups there could be in this situation. Listen, Tom Brady, every week that you forget that Tom Brady is Tom Brady, he's not anybody in the industry who's talking about him. I mean, there were some voices. I heard some whispers in some podcasts that said, hey, the minute you forget Tom Brady, he's going to kill you. It's so true. It's just so true. We forget Tom Brady, and he goes out and he throws 5 touchdowns. He's a beast, 378 yards. I don't know. He's the GOAT. What do you want me to say? He's the best quarterback of all time. We are all witnessing the best quarterback of all time, period. If you ever watched Michael Jordan, you knew what you were seeing. If you're watching Tom Brady, you knew what you were seeing. Brandon Cooks got 7 targets, 5 receptions, 2 touchdowns. Looked sharp, although it's interesting. That one crossing route that he took for the first touchdown to the house, it wasn't an excellent route. I'm not going to pretend to be a film guy. Okay. I'm not going to pretend to be a film guy. But what was clear to me was that the way he created separation was through yards after the catch. It wasn't through elite route running ability. There wasn't a lot of elusiveness to him, but the safety was scared enough of his feet that he gave him a cushion. He gave him the cushion. Cooks took the ball to the house. And as soon as he gets upfield, it's over. If you let that man start running, he's gone. He's gone. And I think that that was reassuring to see that they were capable of scheming for that. The second catch was really good, though. Brady found him in the corner of the end zone. He showed some hand talent there. I was very impressed with that catch. It was very good. 18 yards per reception. Hogan, similarly, slipped out of coverage, found 2 touchdowns. They were really broken plays, though, more than anything. I mean, just completely lost behind the coverage. And of course, Tom Brady, if you put a blue jersey behind coverage and nobody's on him, Tom Brady's going to find him, and he's going to hit him. So he did. Gronk was out there gronking it up. 10 targets, 8 receptions, and a touchdown. You can roster Gronk every week. What do you want me to say? Roster Brady Gronk stack every week. Right? You'll win money on a lot of those. But yeah, tell me I'm wrong. Bills Broncos. Fade a hot quarterback. Don't chase Trevor Siemian's 4 touchdowns. It's ridiculous. He was playing above his pay grade. Sure enough, he struggled mightily, you know, with this pass rush. 24 for 40, 3 sacks, 2 late interceptions that cost them, you know, game-tying drive opportunities. Just bad decisions. You know, running away from coverage off the back foot through a ball, and that just... A corner was like, what are you doing? This is a lob pass. Emmanuel Sanders, though, man, whoa, volume. 15 targets. Demaryius Thomas, 9 targets, good for 160 yards. The one thing I will say is there was one monster Emmanuel Sanders catch that got called back. Had that been upheld, you would be looking at about 220 yards passing for these guys. So they're there. Weird day for the Broncos backfield. Jamaal Charles out touching C.J. Anderson in the rush game. He went for 56 yards and a touchdown. They're going to give him the ball, and he's not a bad running back. Like, he's still got a little bit of gas in the tank, so long as he is healthy. Kind of hard, you know, hard to like C.J. Anderson if he's going to be getting a little bit vultured by Jamaal Charles when he's hot. As for Buffalo, this offense, two tough weeks against two top defenses. You know, this is a high concentration offense. Everything wants to go through McCoy. And when they can succeed, McCoy is going to get volume. 21 total touches, nothing really worthwhile, 68 yards, and 11 carries for Big Mike Tolbert to burn the clock in the fourth quarter. That's why he's there, to soak up volume and try to keep McCoy healthy in game script situations. Tyrod's rapport with Charles Clay continued, 6 for 6 with a touchdown. He's going to find Charles Clay. They get along. It was interesting to see Jordan Matthews. He actually caught a ball. Looks like maybe he is healthy. I'm not going to roster him until we have a plus matchup, though, however. Colts-Browns, T.Y. Hilton falling in the same bucket as Drew Brees, as all of these other guys who we thought we forgot about, we were scared of, whatever the case, uncertain about. There he goes. He goes and does T.Y. Hilton things like only he can do, 100 yards and a touchdown. Classic T.Y. Hilton crossing route at Lucas Oil, where he just catches one, takes a little bit of a left turn across the middle of the field, and just says, bye. He's so fast on that turf. You know exactly the route that I'm talking about. You know exactly what happens when T.Y. Hilton gets going across the middle of the field, and he sees that safety 4 or 5 yards away from him just in a foot race, and he just goes, bro, you're not gonna catch me. And you're not. This is why I love T.Y. Hilton, because he has that Antonio Brown open field, open field type speed where it's just, it's a foot race that you are going to lose. And he plays in Lucas Oil where that track is fast, and he did it. Brissett was fine too. 17 for 24, 71 completion rate. He targeted Doyle 5 times, Hilton 7 times, you know, and obviously Hilton was his best friend. He created massive yards after catch, a few deep runs. That one touchdown was huge. Frank Gore, 25 carries in a positive game script, but good gracious, 57 rushing yards. I mean, is the Cleveland rush defense this good? Like, we saw them kind of shut down Le'Veon Bell, I guess, but then Baltimore got over on them. I have no idea what, you know, I think it's more of a Indianapolis inefficient. You know, I just, there's a lack of running game here. Frank Gore, though, he's going to do Frank Gore things and get into the end zone when they ask him to. On the Brownies, Kizer, pretty bad. 3 interceptions on 47 attempts and a sack. 10 targets to Kenny Britt, 7 to Duke Johnson. Listen, Duke Johnson is going to be one of the better fantasy assets on this team. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Like, he creates the most yardage, 100-plus yards of offense in both games, touchdown on 9 opportunities. He's really effective. You know, and they use him in both ways. Isaiah Crowell, if you want to go buy Isaiah Crowell, go buy him because he's cheap. He's only getting about 12 touches a game. I'm not going to react too much to this game. It's very ugly. It's very hard to determine. It could very easily switch. You know, it's just two teams that are kind of without a clear identity right now, waffling. You know, the Colts are just waiting for luck, and the Browns are just doing Browns stuff, losing mostly. Trying to find a quarterback. Pittsburgh at Chicago. Le'Veon Bell busts out of the touchdown slump. 21 touches for 98 total yards, a touchdown. The volume is there. The snap rate is there. The touchdown happened to be there. The rush efficiency is not quite there, but the pass efficiency making up for it. And he found the touchdown, a little bit of power there to get a goal line, you know, get a push across the goal line. Antonio Brown, 14 targets, 10 receptions, 110 yards, and a touchdown. Listen, if you're keeping track, he is immune to the Ben Roethlisberger road splits this year. 21 total receptions in those two road games, over 200 yards and 2 TDs. If there's somebody who's figured out how to say, listen, Ben, I know you struggle on the road, but I'm going to make this easy on you, it's Antonio Brown. Martavis Bryant, a non-factor really, but Roethlisberger was rough. 56% completion rate. He took 3 sacks. They just really couldn't create enough offense to threaten the Bears. That was the real issue. Like, you got to go run away with it and you got to create some turnovers. They didn't do that. Bears run game found momentum. They limited Mike Lennon's attempts to 22. It was an ideal John Fox game script. This is how he wants it to be done. Just put the ball in Jordan Howard's hands. You know, maybe he's going back towards that 2016 role as long as they're in positive game script, but it's very hard to determine when they will be, you know, especially if they create turnover, like if they give the ball up like they did in Tampa Bay, you know. But 6 yards per carry on 23 touches, even with a sprained AC joint, 5 for 5 out of the backfield on his receptions. That is huge, because if he doesn't have to come off the field on third down on certain series to give up to Tariq Cohen because they know he doesn't have hands of stone, that's big for Jordan Howard. I mean, 28 total touches is huge, 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 huge. If he can actually win that third down role, then that's a big deal. But listen, Tariq Cohen exploded for a massive overtime run. Really impressive. This guy has Sproles, Chris Thompson-like agility, open field speed. He is electric. 100 total yards on 16 touches. Benny Cunningham and Zach Miller were the next two leaders in offense. You know, the most effective receivers. There are no wide receivers here. It's Jordan Howard, it's Tariq Cohen, and it's probably going to be some Benny Cunningham too, honestly. Honestly, that's what they're going to do. And they're just going to kind of fake run the ball by throwing it to their running backs, to be completely honest with you. Miami versus the Jets. Yeah, well, this was really pretty depressing. I had a whole lot of Ajayi, and I kept asking myself this very philosophical question. If a Jet scores in the Meadowlands and there is no one to see it, does it make a sound? I know that's not that funny, but it was basically like every time I looked at this Jets game or it came on Red Zone, I was like, how are there Jets fans there? Like, how are they not in full, like, this is terrible mode? Like, why? You know, I mean, I guess it's just fun to do on a Sunday. It's probably not hard to get a ticket, but like, hey, listen, they were happy. They scored. There were some big plays. Josh McCown, he's an NFL quarterback. He can make great throws. He did that connecting Robbie Anderson on a big 60-yarder. 18 for 23. Only 5 incompletions for Josh McCown. Very impressive. He stretched the field for a couple of big ones. That Robbie Anderson touchdown, like I mentioned, was one of them. Last week, he hit Kearse on a similarly deep one. They're using the fact that he can throw the ball deep, and he's accurate. I mean, this guy's been playing in the NFL for a reason. He's still got a job. He can still huck the ball. It's not fun to project this Jets offense. I'm going to be very clear. We may get some more clarity though. Matt Forte nursing a toe injury. He's going to be day to day. Bilal Powell could see some cheap volume upcoming in positive matchups. So that is something to keep our eye on. Miami offensive line. Guess how many pressures they allowed for Jay Cutler? 17. I'm surprised Jay didn't have 17 freaking interceptions. That is a recipe for disaster. Killed his accuracy. Listen, the volume was still there for Landry and Parker. Even Stills got a good amount of volume. But against a team that, you know, generated a pass rush, it really looked like the Miami, they're not going to be able to run the ball. Okay, that's not good. If they're going to suffer a pass rush, that's not good either. So this Miami team is going to be hard to project. I thought for sure we saw exactly the game script that we were going to get with you know, the Chargers. I don't know. This offensive line could be in trouble. That's all I can say. If Ajayi, you know, they want to feed Ajayi, but if they can only give him 13 touches because they're just getting so many pressures, so many sacks, they can't continue, you know, they're not going to be in, you know, they're always in third and long situations. That's going to be tough. Atlanta-Detroit. This game went over. I said it was going to go over. It went over. I was glad. Listen, the Golden Tate call was heartbreaking, but it was correct. Okay, it was sad and it was wonderful for my head-to-head lineups because I was up against a lot of Stafford and in a lot of head-to-head. So I was with Rodgers in my head-to-head. So I wasn't upset when it got reversed. My biggest takeaway on the Atlanta side is Devontae Freeman. Every single week, this man scores a TD and has almost 100 yards. And we're afraid of him. Why? Because Tevin Coleman? Because this offense creates too much volume? Because they're too efficient? because they're too good, because they can score 30 points a week? Like, what is the point? Why are we scared of Devonta Freeman? The volume was there, 24 total touches, 136 total yards and a touchdown. I love Julio, but listen, there's a more trustworthy fantasy asset on this Falcons team, and it's named Devonta Freeman. 35% of targets, however, for Julio. He was draped in coverage. Darius Slay on him a lot. He was good. 136 yards, however. Or excuse me, 991 yards. That was the Devonta Freeman. Seven balls for 91 yards. Three end zone targets, four deep ball targets. Sarkisian, Sarkisian is going to try to get him involved in the end zone, okay? That's just, you have to. It's Julio Jones. Like, he is one of the biggest, most elite wide receivers that there is in the game. But that doesn't always mean that it's going to be, you know, there's going to be guaranteed touchdowns. And it's very, very tough, you know, to know that Julio is going to see the volume that we want him to see. The touchdown upside that we want to see. He's just not seeing it, but he is seeing deep ball work. And we know that, listen, if some of these pop, there's going to be some big games for him. So a little bit concerning, but it's clear that they're trying to work in more red zone goal line work for him. Taylor Gabriel took the screen to the house, doing Taylor Gabriel stuff, and Sanu snagged the goal line touchdown. So, you know, there is enough volume and efficiency to go around. This offense is a juggernaut. 428 total yards, 24 first downs, and almost a 50% successful play rate. That was 10% higher than the Lions across the board. Okay, they had more first downs, they had more successful higher first down rate, all of that stuff. The Atlanta rush defense, very stout. As well, you know, 14 carries and three catches for Amir Abdullah, which did lead the backfield. That was nice to see. He clearly has the role. However, I will say Theo is their 2-minute drill guy. That's the one that they're going to put in crunch time down the stretch when they're trying to push the ball. That was who was in there. Theo Riddick was in there for Matt Stafford there. But between the 20s, it really does look like Amir Abdullah is going to get that volume. So we're going to be able to go to him in good situations. The problem is, really, they spread the ball around. You know, the guy who's most reliable is still the number one target, Golden Tate. 10 total targets, 7 receptions. You know, only 58 yards, however, because we know he's the underneath guy. And he was inching short of that touchdown, but he looked good. The rapport, we understand, is there. The Lions offense, though, at the end of the day, both of these teams, the volume is there. The efficiency is there. We can trust these teams for fantasy offense. Okay, 45 passing attempts for Stafford is great. There are going to be better days. There are going to be better days. There's days where those 45 pass attempts create 3-4 touchdowns, and you're going to want to be aware of that. So don't, you know, it was almost 2 touchdowns yesterday for roughly 300 yards. So we have to be aware. Don't just chase the box score. Be aware that these things can turn. Tampa Bay, Minnesota, Kevin Rodriguez, longtime listener. I got to apologize. He said, what do you think? I got to get one pick 'em here. I said, Bucks. Sorry, Kevin. Listen, the Bucks forced a ton of turnovers in week one. The defense looked really sharp, but they did allow a pretty high success rate to wide receivers in Chicago, which was very strange. It popped to me, and I was like, one game. You know, maybe they were playing a little bit of a softer coverage. Well, holy Stephen Diggs. 8 for 11, 173 yards and 2 touchdowns. He made 2 unbelievable catches for touchdowns. Ridiculous. His fantasy value can't be overstated. He's an unbelievable threat. He's in play until further notice, especially if Case Keenum continues to play like this. This is the real story. The fear about Keenum docking this offense may be completely unneeded. I mean, 494 total yards of offense and 23 first downs with 369 passing yards, a 76 completion rate with a 142 passer rating. That's just some of the highest numbers of the week. That's insanity. Dalvin Cook was unbelievable. 32 total touches, 160 yards and a touchdown. I mean, this is Devonta Freeman. It's Devonta Freeman with 10 more touches a week. If you gave Devonta Freeman this many, he is shifty. He's in traffic. He's explosive in the open field. 8 total missed tackles for Cook. He's unbelievable. He's someone we have to continue to consider. On the Bucs side, Evan Silva tweeted this out. Listen, Xavier Rhodes through 3 games. This isn't really on the Bucs side. This is Minnesota side. But 3 games against wide receiver ones. Michael Thomas, 5 for 45. Antonio Brown, 5 for 62. Mike Evans, 7 for 67. Wow. This guy is elite. I mean, those are 3 of the best wide receivers in the game. Those are 3 of the best wide receivers of the game, and he is keeping a hat on them. Not, you know, just not letting them go off. And any one of those guys can go off and go up and get the ball. I mean, Thomas and Evans are guys who can go up and challenge you physically. AB, we know in the open field, is just filthy. It's very, very impressive what he was capable of. DeSean Jackson looked great. Jameis found him on the beautiful ball in the deep. Good call by Brian Jester, Occupy Fantasy. Well done, Brian. I love that call. And the run game was a big 0 here, though. In the negative game script, the Bucs had to throw the ball a lot, and it led to 3 Jameis interceptions. That's going to stop an offense dead in its tracks. And, you know, I mean, they're going to be watching that game film. He's going to own up to it. But the problem is this is more of the same of what we see from Jameis. He is this offense's greatest strength and greatest weakness all at once. If they can figure out where he's going with the ball and they track him, and good secondaries can track him, they're going to be able to read him. They're going to know his tendencies. They're going to know what he wants to do. They're going to stop him every time. That's what they did here. You know, 3 interceptions. This is a good secondary, but 3 interceptions is completely unacceptable. 10 targets for, you know, Mike Evans led the team in targets, but Adam Humphrey, strangely enough, 10 targets, 6 receptions. Chris Godwin, 3 for 3, 44 yards and 14 yards per reception. So we know that this team is comfortable throwing the ball when they have to, when they're behind, when they want to shoot out, they can. There's a lot of different fantasy assets in this offense. So we will keep our eye on the Bucs and hope that Jameis can stop throwing interceptions. Seattle, Tennessee. I told my sister's fiance to bench Russell Wilson. Oh, God, I'm sorry. I texted him this morning and apologized. Just said, sorry, that ended poorly. Russ, 373 total passing yards, 4 touchdowns, threw the ball on 76% of snaps. What does that tell you? Oh, my gosh, they are going to have to throw the ball. They still lost. 59% completion rate. That's not great. Jimmy Graham looked very sharp, however. 11 targets, 7 catches, 3 end zone targets for Jimmy Graham. So all the fantasy hate for Jimmy Graham last week, well, he looks slow, he looks out of shape, he's never healthy. Well, take this stat line, read it, remember it, digest it, remember who Jimmy Graham is, and just kind of let's hold our horses, I suppose, is the phrase. Doug Baldwin might be a real serious groin injury. He went for an MRI. We'll probably hear more about it today at some point. Check my phone. Haven't seen anything. Haven't seen anything. That's a disappointment because he went off. He went off and really looked very sharp. 10 for 15, 105 yards and a touchdown. 15 targets is just... that's gorgeous. And that's the problem with this Tennessee team is you can exploit that secondary, and that's how teams attack them. Tyler Lockett, Paul Richardson, ton of routes run, but didn't get any volume. I mean, Richardson's were more valuable. However, he got a deep ball and end zone target. He could be a thing, especially if Doug Baldwin goes down. It's going to have to be somebody, and it looks like it could be Paul Richardson. Chris Carson, 13 total opportunities, a touchdown, only 43 yards. Again, a symptom of the offensive line. He's not an explosive runner. He's more of a bruiser. But he's going to carry the ball if they're in positive game script. So if they're leading, you know, you're going to see volume from Chris Carson. CJ Procise next up in the backfield. Not a single touch for Thomas Rawls and Eddie Lacy. Jeez Louise, what a disappointment. Marcus Mariota's efficiency cannot be ignored. You must look at him. 20 for 36 for 225 and 2 touchdowns. 7 carries for 36 yards. I think it's very important that we look at that because, listen, you go 20 for 36. Oh, that's not very good, Sean. That's not a great completion rate. 20 for 36 isn't that great. Okay, well, on those 36 dropbacks, 7 of those, he created 36 positive yards with his feet, just over 5 yards. just over 5 yards. Math. Just over 5 yards. So there's successful plays, right, on those dropbacks, even though he has to use his fleet feet, those dropbacks that result. So you're really looking at like 27 to 36 for 260 yards created, right? That was kind of his opportunity share, how much offensive volume he created. I understand it's not a perfect measuring stick. I think you understand what I'm saying. Rishard Matthews, he scored a touchdown. He was the lead receiver. A little bit fluky. I don't know if you guys saw it, but hey, it counts. Listen, it was a free play. Somebody jumped off sides. They went to Matthews on the screen, and he broke two tackles and then ran all the way down the field. They chased him all the way down the field. Somebody was almost had him on the 10-yard line, and tight end, it wasn't Delanie Walker, was all the way down the field with him and just trucked two guys who were trying to tackle him, and he scored it out, and he scored a touchdown. Really, it was fluky. It was a free play, but hey, it counts. And Rishard Matthews continues to get massive snaps. He continues to see volume. Listen, Corey Davis was great in week one. He's hurt. He's out. He's not there. What happened in 2016? Rishard Matthews is Mariota's lead wide receiver. Decker and Delanie Walker, 17% of target share, but that's nothing compared to, you know, Matthews continuing to dominate the target share as far as the wide receivers go. DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry, it should be a full-blown committee going forward. Murray showed that he still has pop, though, and he's really not that hurt. 75-yard run on a touchdown accounted for a massive amount of his work. He's only 13 for 40 yards outside of that big run. So, you know, it's kind of a plug thing, a plug along. Derrick Henry, similarly, 13 carries, like 45 yards on his. I think the important thing to note here is if you watch these two broken plays, you may go, wow, it's hard to trust them for fantasy. The interesting thing is that the Titans seem committed to the second level blocking. A lot of these plays would not have been broken touchdown worthy plays if it weren't for wide receivers, tight ends, and offensive linemen like getting their ass out in space and throwing blocks down. It was really impressive. You watch the highlights, you're kind of like, dang, that's some good stuff. There's some blockers down the field that created this situation. It wasn't perfect because, listen, the Seattle secondary did not give up on these plays. Like they had opportunities to make plays. It's just that there were enough Tennessee bodies down there that they made plays before they made blocks and way down the field. It was really, that was impressive to me. I thought it was good stuff. Cincinnati, Green Bay. Hey, Cincinnati's offense looked better, at least for the first half. Okay, they got the ball to Mixon. They got the ball to A.J. Green. A.J., 50% target share. Whoa. Mixon, 21 touches. Whew. If you're a Mixon investor, you were like, oh, thank God. If they want to succeed, that's where they need to be. And listen, Mixon looked good. He looked very good. 6-yard bursts, nice, high-quality running, even behind a pretty poor offensive line. He looked very solid. There are small shares for others, but this is it. This is the offense. It's A.J. Green and Joe Mixon. It's going to be it forever. Like it's where they're going to put the ball in order to create opportunity. They have to put it in their best skill position players because they're not good. This offensive line is still bad, but this was reassuring for fantasy purposes to see Cincinnati play like this. Aaron Rodgers is an animal. That's all I'm going to say about that. Unbelievable. The only end zone catch that rivaled Odell's was Jordy's, and it really was because of Aaron Rodgers' throw. I mean, literally threw it in the only spot where Jordy could get it and Dre Kirkpatrick could not. And Dre Kirkpatrick was on the ball and missed it by a quarter of an inch. He pretty much had, like, you can't watch that film without being like, Dre Kirkpatrick was there to make a play. Aaron Rodgers just zinged it into that bottom corner, bottom right corner. It's an amazing throw. Really, really, really special. Obviously, we understand that the chemistry with Jordy and Aaron Rodgers at home is second to none. Like, it is just should be an auto start. You just don't have to think about it. If they're at home and they're favored, you really should auto start. We're borderline auto start. Jordy and Aaron Rodgers. They're going to do it. They're going to keep doing it as long as they're both healthy. Timeouts, volume, and snap rate, very consistent. Don't get scared. It's still happening. He's still getting the ball. He just couldn't break any free. He couldn't find the end zone this week. And listen, the Cincinnati defense is good, and they committed to stopping him, and they did. They did. They shut him down. Geronimo Allison is an interesting talent. He set up that overtime touchdown. I don't know how many people watched it. Massive catch and run. Counted for a lot of his volume. So if you look at his stat line, know that there was like a 75 or 85 yarder there late. Even though he saw those targets, he wasn't super duper productive. He also had a really bad drop late in that game. Davante Adams held very much in check, primarily because of that pass defense in Cincy, which is very good. He's still going to get targets when Randall Cobb is out. But he's one of those guys who quietly will probably go under the radar as the week goes on because, you know, you didn't see a big line from him. So let's keep Davante Adams in our mind. Kansas City, Los Angeles, it's very hard to love 18 total touches for Kareem Hunt, but it's very hard to ignore the fact that he keeps breaking out these massive runs. I mean, he did it again, a 70-yard touchdown. Finished with 172 yards on only 18 total touches, 17 rushes. Three different breakout runs, three different explosive runs. It's just, he's so elusive. He's so explosive. This is part of his game. Like, he is going to just sneak through, break a tackle, and be gone. It's unbelievable. Tyreek Hill's 40% target share. We got to keep exploiting this. Like, people don't really see him as a wide receiver one. They see him as this gadget explosive guy. He's both. He had two deep targets. One was in touchdown. And he's got 40% target share. He's their number one wide receiver. And he's explosive. Like, he can be both. Like, we have to remember that. Travis Kelce, total bummer. I was really bummed. But the Chargers knew they had to stop him. It was their... They saw the numbers from previous tight ends. They had to stop Kelce, and they saw what he did against Philadelphia. You can't, like, you got to commit to taking one of these guys away. Commit to taking away Kelce, and what happens? You get a Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt touchdowns. It's fantasy roulette. You know, one of them's going to kill you here. The Chargers could not get anything going, and Phillip Rivers, not great. I mean, after going 24 for 25 last week, he was bad this week. 50% completion rate with three interceptions. Killed the value of your pass catchers. I mean, listen, Keenan Allen still had 11 fantasy points, but in a 22% target share, that's not going away. But you really have to be careful about this offense and pick them in good matchups. Melvin Gordon had the touchdown. I don't know. I mean, I trust Melvin Gordon against bad rush defenses. I don't always trust him against good rush defenses, but he is a touchdown hog. We know that. So we're going to approach the Chargers with caution. I mean, they're 0-3 right now, and they need some wins, but they are up and down, to say the least. Skins, Raiders, Redskins defense looked ridiculously good. I don't know how many people watched this game, but those corners were filthy. They shut Carr and Crabtree and Cooper all the way down. Jared Cook snuck in one touchdown after the Redskins muffed a punt, and Raiders got the ball in like the 17-yard line. Cook took one in to the corner of the end zone, nabbed the pylon. It was unbelievable. I mean, they were just rushing straight upfield and closing the pocket on Carr way faster than he was comfortable with. They made an all-pro offensive line look bad, and it was really impressive. It was very, very impressive. The Skins offensive line was completely the opposite. According to Pro Football Focus, 6 total pressures. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Kirk Cousins threw like 83% completion rate. Chris Thompson, yards after the catch, was just backbreaking. 145 yards after the catch on 6 catches. He is just filthy fast and quick and elusive. He's just fun to watch. And he is the best back in that backfield. Samaje Perine looked terrible. Like, just terrible. Like, he looked like he was trying to run against, like, high school guys. He was running into people, inefficient, couldn't find any holes, couldn't keep his head up, wouldn't stay. It just was not good. And then they put Mac Brown in, and he looked fine, actually. Like, he was just as effective in draining the clock. Like, found spots, created seams, and actually was good. Josh Doctson, incredible play on the ball, went up and got it, showed a little bit of athleticism, but don't go chasing that touchdown. It was the only target he had. Terrell Pryor, disappointment. 13% target share. Jamison Crowder had more fantasy points than him, which makes sense. Jamison Crowder was there last year. He's projectable. We kind of understand what he's capable of. Vernon Davis, it's a thing. It's going to be a thing. We should remember this every single time there's a chance for Vern to take Jordan Reed snaps. He's going to be the guy. Okay. Vern is a thing. It's not hard. He did it last year. He's going to do it again. He's going to have five receptions, 60 yards. He's fast. He's still got it. The old man is electric in Washington. They love him there. So he was great. He had like 45 yards and a touchdown. So that's it, guys. I mean, there's some really interesting stuff here. And I think the key things that I want to concentrate on, I want to talk about in this kind of lessons learned idea. Let's go back and let's review some of the key takeaways, not from a player perspective, from a DFS theory perspective about what we saw this week. So the objective that I want to set here is we want to understand how to play the ownership game via public perception and player performance. Okay. If we want to find players that are low owned, we have to be able to, one, gauge what the public is thinking, and two, understand where there is uncertainty or discomfort about player performance. Okay. First thing that we have to be aware of is like just the law of averages, probabilities. Okay. The probability that a red hot player will calm down, cool off, and return to normal is just as likely to happen as a poor performance like Drew Brees, or excuse me, some recent poor performance improves. Like a guy who's playing above his pay grade, a la Trevor Siemian and CJ Anderson, playing extremely, extremely well through two games, are just as likely to regress to the mean and cool down as a guy like Drew Brees being held in check, Drew Brees and Michael Thomas being held in check, are to progress and come back up to what we're used to seeing from them, which they both happened on Sunday. And I think that that's a perfect example of what we see. We see the public very comfortable going, you know what, man, I'll tell you, Trevor Siemian looks really good. Maybe we should think about Trevor Siemian. And we didn't think about Drew Brees. We didn't think at all about Drew Brees improving and really going out and the possibility of him dominating. We considered the possibility that Trevor Siemian would continue to play red hot. But isn't it just as likely that a future Hall of Famer in Drew Brees is going to show up in Carolina against a divisional opponent that he knows really well and dominate? I mean, yes, he's just as elite, if not more. You know, I mean, this is the thing. So public perception would have favored Siemian. The conversation would favor Siemian. People would be more likely to talk about him or feel more comfortable with him. Whereas Brees was a question mark. What's this offense like? They've lost two games already. The defense can't keep them in the game. That kind of thing. Okay. You know, there are spots where we have to use intuition and we have to be aware of what people are thinking and be willing to say, interesting. Everyone and their mother is talking about Le'Veon Bell. But what about Jordan Howard? It could happen, right? Maybe he gets back on track. Everyone and their mother is talking about Julio Jones, you know? Well, what about Devonta Freeman? Those kinds of small pivots away from public thinking are the ways that we can try to find advantages and edges in tournaments. Okay. Now in cash, you almost want to ride with those things because you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. And it was that way with AJ Green. We all were very comfortable expecting, by the way, this is the perfect example, right? We were all very, very, very comfortable projecting Le'Veon Bell and AJ Green to get it back on track. Like that was something you heard all across the industry this week. Le'Veon Bell and AJ Green, they're going to get it back on track. Don't worry about it. These guys are elite performers. But for some reason, we leave Drew Brees and Michael Thomas out of the discussion. You know, for some reason, we leave, Tom Brady and Brandon Cooks out of the discussion. You know, these are the kind of the fallacies, the little holes you see. And you kind of say it's not an apples to apples comparison. I understand there are different reasons to like different players on a week to week basis. And there were very clearly documented reasons to like Green and Bell. The point is being a part of the logic behind it was they will improve. They're going to get better. They're not going to have their whole season be like this. Okay, well, yes. But the same is true for the other guys, right? Like Brandon Cooks is not going to not have a touchdown with Tom Brady. So that's important to note. We have to kind of use some intuition on gauging public sentiment, player performance. And I think we have to be willing to say, you know what, listen, Trevor Siemian's a little bit above his head right now. Let's not expect this again. You know, somebody's playing a little bit above their pay grade. Let's slow it down a little bit. Right. And it's just as comforting to say, you know what, he's not playing very well right now, but the opportunities are there. I think he's going to improve, that kind of thing. The second thing, football is events based. OK, projecting events is very hard. This is why people tilt, because you think you're able to figure out, wait a second, he was supposed to score a touchdown. Why didn't he score a touchdown? Everything's supposed to be go exactly the way. It's not how it works. OK. It's just as worthwhile to try to project something weird happening as it is something normal happening. We can comfortably say it's not weird for us to think that Julio Jones goes for a 60-yard touchdown. If I said that to you this week, you'd go, yeah, I can see what you're saying, Sean. Yeah, 60-yard touchdown for Julio. That makes sense. They're trying to get him more involved. We know he's a deep burner. He da 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 da. But if I say, hey, listen, there's a decent chance, you know, there's a chance, not a good chance, but there's a chance that Taylor Gabriel could take one to the house. Yeah. Is there? The problem is that because this is the weird thing, right? Because it's events based, we have to believe that it's very possible that Taylor Gabriel can take one to the house, right? We have to believe that it's possible. It may not be as probable, but we have to believe that it's possible. And when we say, I think it's possible, I think it is possible. It's also possible that Julio Jones doesn't score and Taylor Gabriel does score. Then you have leverage on the field, because it's uncomfortable to say, maybe Taylor Gabriel scores, maybe Julio Jones doesn't. Oh, geez, I don't know, man. I mean, come on, it's Julio Jones. So much more comfortable to project clear assets that we trust and we know and we see the record, and that makes total sense in cash games. But for tournaments, it has very little worth. Okay, so that's something to be very clear. The one other thing, the last thing, the third point that I wanted to make about public perception, ownership, player performance, is the life cycle of player performance. Week one, week two, week three. I want you to think through Stephon Diggs. Week one, week two, week three. Week one, oh man, I'm excited for Stephon Diggs. He should have a good role this year. Yes, everything is working. Stephon Diggs is amazing. Two touchdowns. He's the best. Da, 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 da. Great. Week two, well, maybe we should definitely look at Stephon Diggs. He's a key part of this offense, right? Pittsburgh, well, it's not going to be a perfect. They're going to need him. Oh, no Bradford. Well, I think he could still get it done. He's elite. Week three, crickets. We didn't talk about Stephon Diggs. Why didn't we talk about Stephon Diggs? Because he got shut down in week two. All of a sudden, Keenum's on the floor. Keenum's on the field. We're super depressed about Case Keenum. Everybody's tilting the fact that Sam Bradford is out. Oh, no, all these Minnesota offensive assets are so bad. It's not going to work. And then what does he do? He blows up. How quickly we forget. It was a matter of 3 weeks. It was 3 weeks and one bad performance. And all of a sudden, we have crickets. Crickets. Who busted this week? Who was a total, complete letdown? Jay Ajayi. Don't forget him next week. Who else was a complete and total letdown this week? Mike Evans. Don't forget him this week. You know, all of these names that people forget, the public, the memory is so short. And our memory can't be short. We have to be cautious about that. And we have to stop ourselves from falling into these player life cycles where all of a sudden, all we can think about is the last touchdown that they scored. And we're in our brain and we're going, yeah, but he didn't score last week. And all we look at is their box score from the one previous week. And we go, yeah, 5 for 5 for 45 yards, though, Sean. That's not that good. I need touchdowns. It doesn't mean it's not going to happen. Michael Thomas, is he going to go the whole 2017 season without scoring a goddamn touchdown? No, he's not. He's Drew Brees' number one wide receiver. He's the number three all time in passing yards and passing touchdowns. Like, it's not going to happen. So you have to be ready to check yourself mentally and say, okay, the life cycle of a player, who is down in everybody's mind this week? Who's a guy, the public perception that, you know what, people aren't really talking about him because he had a bad week last week. But you know what? We still know he's got a good role. We know he's got that role. We know he's got potential. We know he could get it done. Those guys are very important because they will go overlooked because we are mouth breathers and we have short memories. Including me, the analyst. I'm a mouth breather. I'm an idiot. Anyway, that'll give you a lot of confidence in your podcast taste, right? All right, guys. Hey, I'm out of here. LineupLogicDFS.com. Review and subscribe to the podcast. Good stuff. I'll check in with you tomorrow for the game-by-game breakdown. See ya.